Scott Welch for The Magic Word, and I'm here with my guest today, Ian Rowland. Ian, welcome to the U.S.
Good to be here. Good to be here at Magic Live, and I hope guest and friend.
Well, not just guest. Thank you very much. Been a good close friend. I'm so glad that you happen to be here in Las Vegas. Right now, I happen to be here for Magic Live, and while I was here, I thought I would have a chance to chat with my old friend. You're not that old. I'm older than you are. Your hair is grayer than mine.
Old friend is fine. Decrepit. Usually is the adjective that
it's the knees
in.
That go first, it seems like.
So true.
But I wanted to talk with you about these crazy cards and things that you make. There was an article in Genie Magazine.
There was.
When was it, about a year ago or two?
2004. Does
time fly.
Time,
okay, see, we're old guys. I guess soon we'll have canes like over here as well. So the point is that you have been making these before that time, and you got to be well-known. There's probably very few, if any, other people in the world who do these.
I have been making them a long time. There are just a handful of guys who make stuff like this around the world, puzzle enthusiasts and math enthusiasts. But yeah, they're kind of unique.
Well, talk about them a little bit, because obviously it's a podcast and people can't see them. What are the cards exactly?
I don't really see the problem. I'm holding them up to the microphone now. What is the problem with these listeners?
Can't you guys see this?
For heaven's sake, Braille radio.
Both sides, yeah.
Reach out your fingers to the radio.
Bend.
Okay, you start with a regular playing card from a regular deck. You make some slits and some folds, and then you fold them into interesting patterns. Some of them just pretty kind of, oh yeah, that's a cool design. And some of them have a kind of an impossible quality in the sense of it's really hard to figure out how they were made into that particular shape, how they were made into that particular design. That's what we're talking about. Over the years, I've called them wow cards or fantasia cards or whatever. I haven't really settled on a name for them.
So if you guys have an idea, just why don't you just post something here?
Please,
on the
if you have a great idea,
that's right.
Write it on a sheet of paper, curl it up into a ball, and throw it under
put it
under
bottle
a log.
With a bottle
in a bottle.
The ocean.
London, England. And that's what I do. I make them, and they're fun. But I didn't invent the idea. I'm not the pioneer.
Who is?
There was an English puzzle enthusiast, a guy called Angus Lavery. He saw something that's very well known in magic called the trapdoor card.
Called the what?
Trapdoor card.
Oh, yes, of course.
Topology and magic sort of combined.
No, is that the one that turns inside out where you have the door, one side?
And he saw that. And he just kind of inspired him and enthused him to think, how many kind of themes and variations can I think of that work the same way? And he made a lot. And he showed me the kind of the basics.
There's a parallax, I think they call it, a parallax card. Okay.
And he showed me the basics, and I was inspired by them. I think they're...
So it's just the two of you guys are kind of then doing it?
No, well, I've lost contact with Angus over the years. I'm not really sure if he's still involved in this area, but he certainly gets the credit, I think, for inventing these things. He gets the credit, and I was able to develop it with I was able to use like computer graphics programs to plan them and work them out, and I make them in paper first, and then finally do the card ones, and it's just become.
So you do kind of a prototype first before each one?
Yeah, I have to. First of all, I work it out on the computer, then I print it out and work it out on paper, and then finally, when I've got a design that works, which could be like 27, 28 versions down the line, I finally make it out of
card. So do you doodle on a piece of paper first and then you take it to the computer, or do you start at the computer?
No, I do little sketches, of what I think might be possible.
And it's like a little maze almost.
Some of them are very simple, but some of them take about... certainly one design I know I was working on for about 10 or 11 weeks to try and get the design right.
Wow, for one card.
And then it takes about 50 minutes to actually create.
How long?
Some of the worst ones take about 50 minutes.
Wow.
5-0.
I would have guessed longer.
Well, I'm really good.
But, the first few must
No, but
been
some of them are very
impossible.
Simple. Some of them can be made in, 10 minutes. But the difficult ones take much longer.
Have you ever sold them? I just wonder what the value of these, tested the water.
The current situation is that I don't sell them. Mm-hmm. Money cannot buy them. But I make them for people I like. Mm-hmm. Have I ever made any for you, Scott?
Precisely. I thought we were friends.
That's the point, really. No. I make individual ones, and I also make frame sets of like 6 or 8 in a kind of a display picture frame, which I've made for certain people that I've
David
met
David Berglas and some people, I guess.
David Berglas has some. Jim Steinmeier has some. I have made some for Uri. I've made some for James Randi. Various people over the years who've made a contribution.
Have you made one to Banachek? I don't remember seeing one. You don't like either one of us.
He's certainly seen them. I think he may actually receive one or two over the years as gifts. And if he hasn't, Heidi certainly has. Heidi has about 54 of these.
Yeah, I understand of course.
She's got dozens of them. They're lying around the house.
I know. Like, I would never get. Now, you may have given one to Kathy, and I just don't know it. Yeah, she may be hiding that.
Kathy has many of these things with embarrassing affectionate notes written on the back. And my friends, Jeff and Tessa Everson, I made a set for them, and it's on their boat. They put it on their boat now. It's displayed. Uh-huh. This display of things is on their boat. So there are a few of these around the world, some in different places, yeah.
I was going to ask you then also about Uri Geller, a little bit, that and your relationship. You've known him for a long number of years?
I've known him for a long time. We've only been friends for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay. How did you first get to know him? I guess through television, I guess? You saw him with everybody else?
I was there at 9:40 p.m. on November the 22nd, 19... whenever it was. When he appeared on BBC television, he did his act, and it stormed everything. The next day, everybody was just talking about Uri Geller, and he was a profound influence. And then the next year, I read Randy's book, The Magic of Uri Geller.
Right.
And that started me off on a certain path, and, you know, if it hadn't been for those two events, we wouldn't be talking now.
That is incredible. And that would have been about what year again? 90...
I'm trying to remember. Was it 73?
73.
I think. It was November the 22nd, 1973, I think.
You think?
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what time of the day that would have been?
9:40 p.m.
You think?
I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. You and Uri have gotten to be good friends, say, over the last few years then?
For a long time, he felt I was some sort of enemy, so we weren't friends. But we were introduced by David Berglas, and we've been friends for about the last 3 or 4 years.
Was it because that you were a magician or a mentalist, I guess, or considered, and so he didn't want to have anything to do with...
I don't really know, and I don't want to try and pretend that I can speak for him, because I can't. And in any case, it's all in the past. It doesn't matter.
We're friends now,
he understands that there's no enmity or anything, and we've worked together on a few things. I've been a consultant for him, and I've got a lot of time for him. He's a very nice guy.
And let's talk about Darren Brown just a touch then also. Have you helped Darren with his shows and Andy Nyman and those guys?
No. I knew Darren before he was famous.
Before he was Darren.
But not... yeah, when it was still Eileen Wilkincott. I just made that name up. Before, when he was cleaning toilets. No, I met him. We were friends before he got his TV break, and... We used to hang out. He used to live in a city in England called Bristol. We'd hang out there. We'd hang out in London. And then, you know, great for him. He got the Channel 4 contract, and he got the deal. And, of course, now he's just a massive, massive star.
Someone was talking about that, how he can't walk across the street. Now, I remember that Paul Daniels had that notoriety. Would you say that he has eclipsed Paul Daniels?
Not notoriety. You know, this is fame. This is celebrity. You know?
Well.
But Darren is...
I didn't say he was notorious.
Darren is... Yeah, he's a very, very big name. I think it's hard for people outside of England to understand just how big he is. He's a huge star. His TV shows do very well. He sells out live theater dates the length and breadth of the country. And he's a very, very big star now. All credit to him. You know, he's got the talent, and he's put the work in. He deserves it. Yeah.
Yeah. And he seems to... I'm surprised that he hasn't carried on overseas here, across the pond. I mean, he's had a few shows.
It's America's loss.
I think so, and I don't know why that they haven't caught on. You know, that I've seen some of the shows that have been broadcast here, but it's been like on a cable station or something.
Yeah. I believe they had a little run on Sci-Fi Network.
That was in the Sci-Fi. Had a
that
couple
was
of,
a little bit of original material. Plus some recut from the British shows, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But then, of course, as you know, I'm hardly ever wrong about anything.
Yeah, well, so that must be a fact. As I can, we can take that to the bank, I guess.
I should think so, yeah.
Okay, very good. And so the venues that you work as a mentalist, do you find that they are similar to what magicians work, or do you have a completely different kind of clientele?
It's very interesting, actually, because I do some gigs that are like, it's just entertainment. Hey, come along and give us a show. I do some of those. But most of the work I do now is corporate training and presentation. So it's in the corporate sphere, and you know, I have a number of products that I sell into that. I have Persuasion Secrets, and I teach ACR, and I teach a few other subjects. And that's actually where I do a lot of work now, and it's a fantastic kind of line of work to get into. And it pays nicely, and you get treated well, and it's one that more and more mentalists could exploit, but very few actually do, and I think that's a shame.
Is it because they don't know how to market themselves as well as what you're
doing?
I don't
know. I think a lot of it's just that sometimes, in some cases, it's they don't see the potential. They don't realize just that they could be doing this, and it's not that much of a leap from, you know, doing a cabaret show. And in other cases, they perhaps feel it's just not what they want to do.
You know. Do you customize for that particular client, or do you have like a cookie cutter can?
No, I have a number of products. For example, I have a one-day course that's all about persuasion okay. skills, which is the course I gave to the FBI.
It includes like breakout sessions and all that kind of stuff.
It could, but as it happens, it doesn't. It's four 90-minute sessions, and, okay. and this is the course that I presented to the FBI, and I presented it to groups within quite a large number of companies in the UK as well. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't need customizing, because in the same way that, you know, the fundamentals of mathematics or the fundamentals of music are the same wherever you are, the fundamentals of what constitutes good persuasion technique and what doesn't really change.
That's right.
So, yeah, I have products like that.
And what do you see as the future then right now? I know mentalism, first of all, is very hot in the UK. It seems like the kinds of stuff that Banachek and I sell, 80% of our foreign sales go to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that Darren has a lot to do with that, and you and Andy as well, you know.
Nothing to do with me.
Oh.
Nothing to do with me at all. No. David Berglas, the Darren effect, the success of Darren and Andy's shows, that's mm-hmm. what's caused it all.
And Andy's got a show, what, The Invisible Man, doesn't he have a...
Ghost Stories,
yeah. That's what it is, yeah.
Andy sat down with one other writer, and they created this great new play called Ghost Stories. It's kind of episodic. It's three ghost stories put on
live stage. West End, or where are they?
And it plays... They started off West End, and mm-hmm. it went well, and they've now had a successful transfer to London's West End, where it has sold and sold and sold.
Amazing.
Done very well, become a huge success. Well, again, all credit to them.
Yeah.
Very creative, very brave thing to do, and I'm so pleased that they've had the success that they've had. It's been wonderful.
Are you doing any TV work?
No.
For the BBC or anything like that?
I get invitations now and again, and I don't want to have anything to do with television.
Really? And
no.
Creative producing, nothing to do with that?
No, I don't.
Well, it sounds like you don't have a strong conviction with bad experience, or just don't care to it, or just don't think there's the...
All of
that's
that.
That's not for you. You got other...
All of these boxes. I did a lot of nobody knows about it, because it didn't lead to anything, but I did a lot of television in the 1990s. And television people are incredibly cavalier and careless with your time and with your material. And
you have no idea what's going to happen to it, or how it's going to turn up, or
and
how
I
to
just,
use it.
Yeah. I'm just not interested. I get invitations, I get offers, but it's not something that interests me. Apart from which, I'll leave it, quite happy to leave it to, you know, the younger guys, the good-looking guys, still up and coming, who think it's so important to get TV exposure. I'm happy to stand aside and say, you know, give the opportunity to these young guys.
Right.
Because
right.
I'm just old and past it now, so it doesn't really matter.
Do you have anybody that you mentor? I mean, like, you give lectures.
Nobody
and
asked
thing
me
and
to
so.
Mentor them.
Really? They haven't?
Nobody asked me to mentor them.
Okay.
No.
I just wondered, you know, how involved you were with the... with the community, and I mean the, you know, the magic and mentalism community. And,
no, nobody asked me for anything.
Let me ask you then about the your take on mental magic. Is there such a thing in which that you can perform mentalism such that it's a magic mystery? Or do you have an opinion on that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know of the discussions.
Okay.
And I know that within the magic community, on the Magic Cafe and elsewhere, there are people with quite a profound interest in what is the difference between mentalism and mental magic and mind magic and
right.
what's magic. And
you have a take
all
on
of
that?
The all yeah, all of, my take is I don't understand any of it and I don't know anything.
Okay.
I have no idea.
No dog in that fight.
I have no fight in that dog. I really just do what I do, and people can slap any label on it that they want. If some people want to regard what I do as mentalism, okay. If some people want to say it's mental magic, and if some people want to say it is third-rate dross of the worst possible kind, I'm good with that. I'm not really sure I want to spend that much of whatever hours I have left on this planet debating whether it's mental magic or mentalism, or whether you should use playing cards or not. What matters to me is, are my audiences getting something positive from what I do, and am I earning a living?
Right.
That's it.
That's important.
That's it.
What about disclaimer? Do you give a disclaimer? What do you feel about it?
I don't need to, because I'm not claiming anything in the show.
Okay. You just kind of let the chips fall.
It would be like a stand-up comedian giving a disclaimer. I'm not doing anything in my show that claims or even hints at, or there's no innuendo of having any kind of special power. No, at all. They just know it's Ian Roland sort of messing about on stage. So there's nothing to disclaim. I wish there were, that would be great, but there isn't.
Have you done any seances or done anything like the paranormal? I mean, I would think there's certainly a lot of things that would lend itself to the spooky side in London, but you haven't been involved in anything like that?
No, nothing like
psychic,
that.
Psychic readings or any of that kind
nope,
of?
Nothing.
Okay.
No,
okay.
I do two things. I go out on stage and give people a good show, and I do my corporate training.
Your check and go home.
After doing that for 25, 30 years, whatever it is, I'm pleased to say I'm proud.
Mm-hmm.
If it's okay to be pleased and proud.
Of course.
That after all that time and the hard work and the effort and the consistent application towards my goals have brought me fame roughly on a par with the Sistine Chapel floor.
Everybody walks on you.
And I think you kind of rode over by punchline there.
Okay,
but that's okay. That's fine. That's all right. We're friends. You can do that. No, I mean, it hasn't led to anything. But it's been a fun ride.
Okay. And you work in a lot of countries, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This year I've traveled. I've been in Finland for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Turkey in Istanbul. Went to Cappadocia. I've been to Las Vegas before, but this was good. I saw Berlin for the first time. I love traveling more than I love life itself. I really do. I'm totally serious about that.
Yes.
And for anybody organizing any event, anything, anywhere in the world, it's so easy to get me to go and do a show, do a lecture, whatever, to give all my material away. They just say, if it's a place I haven't visited before, I'm there.
You're ready to go.
Just give me my airfare. You can have a lecture. You can have a show. All my material. Anything you want. I love traveling. I genuinely, it's a passion. Yeah.
Yep.
Love it.
And which means, have you ever done cruise ships?
No.
Is that something that you've thought about doing?
No.
Or are you kidding me? I know that others...
No.
Have, okay.
No.
Okay, then.
Still have a brain that works.
Well, I'm just saying that they travel the world and you can get in and out of different ports.
It's
travel.
Welcome to Lisbon. You have 7 hours in this beautiful port, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
Please get back to the boat before too...
Before we shove off.
That's not traveling. No.
Okay.
I haven't done a cruise ship. Then again, if a very lucrative contract was to come my way... I'm the world's easiest guy to buy. No scruples, no morals. There's enough money, I'll do it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, as we start to wrap up, the title of our podcast is called The Magic Word. My question is to you, what is your magic word?
My magic word is, I'm pleased and proud to be a friend of Scott Wells.
There you go. That is one long word.
I ran it all together. I elided.
I appreciate that. That was Ian Roland from London, England. Thank you very much for your time. And for me, Scotty out.